G'day, Stu.
Check, 1, 2.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
how are we going there? I'm good, thanks, Mick. How you doing?
You're obviously a local. You're here on 2SER, usually on this side of the desk.
Indeed, it's kind of weird being on this side.
But it's nice to be able to talk to you on that side of the desk. And look, let me just start by saying this is a great book, a really great idea.
Thank you.
Talking about the people behind the music, we're talking about the people who, without them, these live shows probably wouldn't even happen. And these are long history of roadies in Australia, and you've managed to delve right into it. Where did you get the idea for this?
Look, I got the idea when I was researching the book I wrote about Michael Gudinski. And I had a guy called Adrian Anderson helping me. He was telling me about Melbourne in the late 60s and early 70s, and you know, an era that I wasn't around. And he happened to mention that he was involved with this organisation called the Australian Road Crew Association. And I thought, oh, this is nice. Yeah, this is good. You know, old roadies getting together. And then he told me about the suicide rates. Anecdotally, they have, you know, between 4 and 5 times the national suicide rate.
Yeah,
you know, and a plethora of other mental health issues. And I thought, well, this is, you know, I wondered why this was the case. Mm. And then I started thinking, yeah, no one's really, you know, there's one book by a guy who spent 50 years of his life working with the Ted Mulry gang. He's only ever worked with Ted Mulry. And so then I heard Neil Finn on an ARIA Awards thank his road crew. And then, you know, Paul Kelly now thanks his road crew. And I thought, yeah, you know what, there's something in this. Because they are, you're right, they're the unsung heroes of the music industry. They spend their entire lives making musicians sound and look better than frequently they deserve to. And if the better they are, the more anonymous they are.
Yeah.
Because we only see, you know, we go to gigs. You and I go and see lots and lots of bands. We saw one together, you know, only a week ago in Brisbane. Yeah. And we didn't see any road crew, did we? Because the show was going really well.
Yeah.
Usually you'll only see a road crew if smoke starts billowing out of the back of an amp, a drum kit falls over, or one of our mates who's just had 75 schooners decides that it's a really good idea to get on stage and sing the chorus with somebody, yeah, right? Then you're going to see a roadie. But, you know, they've been frequently there at a venue since before the sun's come up.
Mm.
They've set up, you know, lugged all this gear. And more often than not, they don't finish till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, yeah. They can do 18, 20, 22-hour days. And it's hard work. But the other thing I realized talking to them all, you know, because the stereotype of the roadie is, you know, they take bad drugs, you know, they're not real bright, they lift things, you know, and they wear shorts.
Really tight shorts in
some
cases.
Yeah, you know, the bad drugs bit can occasionally be true, but they have to be really smart.
Yeah.
You know, roadies don't, I realised as I was going through, I interviewed about 50 of them, I could be spending the rest of my life talking to roadies. There are, you know, thousands of them. But I realized at a certain point, roadies don't ask if something's possible. It struck me that they just go, how do we do it?
Yeah.
You know, what, you know, do we have to drill, you know, through this floorboard and lead a cord up through here, and then maybe we're going to have to smash this, and then we'll connect this to so-and-so. You know, they're all about solving problems. And they're, you know, not only do they work hard, but they have to be, you know, really ingenious. Mm. And they're like you and I doing radio or someone flying a plane. Once you know the basic skills, it's fairly straightforward. You only find out how good you are when something screws up.
It goes wrong.
It screws up badly. And that's when a good roadie just comes to the fore. Yeah.
And that's right. I just couldn't believe as well that not only do you need those skills to be able to think on your feet and fix those technical problems, but what I've found in a lot of the chapters I've read so far, a lot of them say it's about managing the people. It's about the people and managing the band and learning how to deal with all the personalities around the music. Yeah. That is so important to a roadie. And I never really thought about that.
Yeah, no, they're sort of, you know, you wouldn't call them armchairs because they don't have time to be in armchairs. But, you know, there's certainly a big degree of psychological management in that. And also you're dealing with very heightened situations. I mean, the adrenaline before a rock and roll show, during and after, you know, is astonishing. Mm. You're also dealing with people that are frequently really tired and have been on the road for weeks and months at a time. You're dealing with some very, very precious egos, and that's not just the roadies, but you're dealing with, and so you throw all of those in together, and maybe just a little bit of after show partying and general good times, and yeah, you've got a recipe for all sorts of, you know, volatility.
Yeah,
and every musician will tell you, you know. Well, the smart ones will. You better be nice to your road crew, because they, you know, they as well as nursing you through a whole bunch of these psychological things. I mean, they know everything.
That's right. You know, they hear everything, see everything.
They are the custodians of more information than, you know, you care to think about. And people said to me, "How did you get them to talk?" You know, because they said they won't talk to me. That I was lucky. You know, I shored up some very established, credible, you know, road crew early on. But it was interesting because there was one great moment where one roadie in Melbourne said, "Look, you know, when you talk to this guy in Sydney, he knows this really, really great story." But he said, "I can't tell you, but maybe he will." And so I was doing the interview, and it's not in the book.
Oh.
And after about 4 hours, you know, I said, "You got to tell me the story about, you know, insert famous Australian band concert on an island in Sydney Harbour," and so he told me the story, and I said, "Oh, you know, it's cool. Can I put it in the book?" And he said, "Look, you can," but I said, "He said I'd really prefer if you don't."
Right.
And I said, "Why? You know, no one's hurt in the story. There's nothing scurrilous. It's just a great rock and roll story." He said, "Stuart, it's important that there are some stories that only roadies know." And I thought, "What's such a great, you know?"
That is
he
cool.
said, "You know," he said, we need to have our little world where we know some stuff that that no one else knows, and it's our, part of our code."
Well, it's amazing that he did tell you the story, even if you can't put it in the book.
And I guess that goes back to the fact that he had to trust me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I could have put it in the book.
And it sounds like you have garnered the trust of a lot of the roadies in the book, who I've shared a lot of amazing stories that you've written about. So really, really exciting. It would have been amazing to sit down. But like, is it 4 hours you spoke to one person? That's amazing.
I spoke to, I do the hard yards. I think out of 50 interviews that I did, they all went between 3 and 4 hours, and only maybe 3 were done on the telephone. I actually sat down with all of them and eyeballed them.
Awesome.
I think it's important, and that there comes the trust.
Face to face,
and you know, and I've been around for at least a couple of years, so you know they respected that, I think, and I respected them.
I never realized before reading this book just what a crazy lifestyle rock and roll was back in the 70s and 80s in Australia. And just how dangerous and violent and like just full on, you know, intense the environment was surrounding the music. Is this something you knew about already? This sort of, or was it even amplified when you spoke to the roadies?
I had a glimmer, Mick. I mean, I had a little bit, you know, because I managed bands in the 80s, the Hoodoo Gurus and Paul Kelly and stuff. So I had a bit of that, and I'd heard some stories, but no, nothing quite prepared me for how on the fly and how, you know, it was a cowboy world of making stuff up. There was no training.
Yeah.
You know, these guys and women, you know, I was pleasantly surprised to find a number of very, you know, very significant and very talented women in every era of roading. But no, I was staggered by a couple of things that, given the millions of miles before we had kilometres, that these people drove before RBT, frequently with multiple grams of biker speed by their side and a bottle of Jack Daniels, you know, on the floor. And some of them said we put a brick on the accelerator and just pointed the truck towards Perth.
It's the old cruise control.
One of the great lines is, every time when we were driving the Nullarbor, you know, whenever we saw a kangaroo, someone had to roll a joint. He said, you got any idea how many kangaroos you see between Melbourne and Perth? But I'm, you know, there's been some tragic accidents. You know, Cold Chisel lost a couple of crew when they were working with Swanee. Thirsty Merc, you know, much more recently. Sherbert, Max Merritt and the Meteors had a bad accident. But the fact that you and I can sit here and name these accidents, I mean, it is staggering that death toll was not so much greater. And the other thing that amazed me was the violence that the crews were subjected to in particular regional towns and some major urban venues, but where they were basically considered sport for the local bozos who would really, you know, drink, you know, their weight and some, and then wait around to...
Blocking the road on the way out of town.
Yeah, I mean, the stories of, like, you know, yeah, having to really fight their way out of towns. And I'd never heard so many firearm stories.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know Queensland had such lax gun laws back in the day.
I learnt that, you know, every band and every crew went to Queensland and they bought a gun. You know, these are different times. I mean, everything about it reeks of, like, a very different time and place. Yes. And, I said to them, you know, what did you do with guns? You know, like one of them had one, so someone else had to get one. You know, and it was just because they were bored. They were long hours.
Yeah.
And they would just be out in the middle of nowhere. And they'd, you know, all those signs that we see on the road with bullet holes in them. That's roadies.
Well, it is a fascinating, fascinating read. And I recommend, look, it's out now, Roadies, mm-hmm. The Secret History of Australian Rock and Roll. You'll see it everywhere. You'll see it in the airport. Go get it at the airport. I'm sure it'll be at the airport bookshop.
Hope so.
And then you can just grab it and read it on the plane. And it's a nice, easy read, but it's very well written and an eye-opening look at the stories in Australian rock and roll that you probably have never heard, and I'd certainly never heard. And I thought I knew a fair bit about Australian rock and roll history, but that's the great thing. This is the secret stuff that you may not have heard from the roadies themselves. Such a great idea. You know, I reckon this could be made into a movie, like this sort of stuff, or a doco at least. I mean, maybe there's no footage, that's the thing. So you'd have to do a movie where people are playing these. Yeah,
I'm looking for the movie.
Yes.
I think Roadies the movie. I mean, there's been the TV series, and there was that movie with Meatloaf in it. I think the time is right for the reprise of the movie. Oh, you know, about look, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are so many stories in there. You know, the golf tournament in Jimmy Barnes's room, you know, and you know, Bon Scott's motorbike being stolen by his road crew just so that he wouldn't crash it.
Yeah.
You know, the story after story after story. I mean, a scriptwriter wouldn't have to work real hard.
Exactly. One last question, Stuart. The term roadie, I just looked at it and thought, that's got to be Australian, right? Did we make up the name roadie?
That's a very interesting point, Mick. And I believe that it is actually a unique Australian expression because
yes.
We put a Y on the end of it. Yeah, roadie. So, you know, I think in the rest of the world, they are road crew. But here, mate, you're a roadie, aren't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. So I like to think we invented the word.
No, someone did point out the other day, I honestly don't go into it in the book. I hadn't thought about it. And someone said, do you realise that, you know, Australia invented roadie?
I hope so.
And we're claiming it.
Good, good. Stuart Coop, thank you so much for joining us here at 2SER.